Hello and welcome to Real Geeks Presents the B-Roll. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
And you know what? As much as I've enjoyed really delving into horror for the first time and getting into the B-movie glory that only the holiday season can bring us, I've kind of missed the B-roll.
No pressure bullshit. No pressure bullshit.
Like, particularly how, like, well, when I said that we were going to get back to this show, I was envisioning, like, a couple weeks of shows of just hanging out and chatting about general Hollywood stuff. The stuff that we'd always wanted to talk about on the show, but never got around to it because things kept coming up. Or even just stuff like how I was on TikTok before we started recording this. And I was today years old when I discovered that apparently Japan thinks that griffins and unicorns are the same goddamn thing.
That's... I wonder which gets the attention? Like, is it what we consider to be a griffin or what we consider to be a unicorn? And if so, do they know about the other one that they have been completely robbed of?
Well, the fascinating thing here is it was just this random TikTok showing the first time on Power Rangers when they got their new Thunder Swords, and I use new in air quotes because it's literally the old Megazords getting hit by lightning and magically turning into something else.
Neat.
And they get to the blue and yellow Rangers, and the blue Ranger now has a unicorn. Yes, the gay actor was piloting a unicorn. I will leave the jokes to you. And the Yellow Ranger had a griffin, and I'm sitting there going, this is like 15 to 20 years old, and I'm only now noticing that both of those Zords are the same fucking thing, and neither one looks like the creature they're supposed to be.
I mean, at the very least, whoever did the writing for Power Rangers while using footage from a completely different show certainly tried to pull a fast one on some fucking children and succeeded.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I know that I was never really a fan of the show, but that is not a goddamn excuse.
I am old enough that when I was a fan as a wee child, I think, if I recall, like, I stopped paying attention after that movie came out. Like, the movie was hype. Everyone loved it. And then it's like, oh, back to the show and nothing has changed. Okay, I am checking out of this. But from beginning to that movie, that was my childhood. I was, I think, 8 or 9. And I am so old that when we used to, quote unquote, play Power Rangers, it meant fucking fighting a motherfucker. No, we're not fighting. We're playing Power Rangers. Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah,
and they wouldn't, send you to a shrink for that or, like, have the cops arrest you. They'd just be like, stop that. So you go and do it on the other side of the school.
No, like for me, like, for listeners who don't know, I am 42. So... In terms of the generational line of whether or not you are a Power Rangers fan, I am like just like maybe a year or two on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, that's a crucial bit of time there. Like, yeah, I was a kid. I was a kid, like perfect audience. I want to say like between 5 to 8. Around there, I can't be held responsible.
No, No, yeah, fair enough. Now, the other thing that TikTok decided to randomly show me, and I'm just going to describe this and get your reaction, just because this is something that I've seen on social media in general so many times that I'm honestly curious what you think of this.
Mm.
So it's the famous scene at the end of Endgame where Thanos goes to snap, but nothing happens. He realizes that the Infinity Stones are gone. And then we cut to Tony Stark. And it's the famous, and I am Iron Man. Like right before he snaps, wipes out Thanos' army and so forth. For some reason, there are people who are obsessed with the idea that what if instead of the score that was originally on that scene, Iron Man by Black Sabbath kicks in?
I feel like that would be a complete misunderstanding of the dramatic pacing at that point. If you were kicking into an action scene, certainly. But this is a this is like, I want to say that the climax of that actual fight occurs when Thanos's blade thing, like sword, double sword, hits the van. Like up until that point, everything's a race to there. It's escalation. Thanos has obliterated his own army, more or less trying to like stop the Scarlet Witch. Everything has gone to hell. All plans are out. We can't throw it back in time. Thanos is gonna get the gauntlet. This is like, we're not building towards anything else anymore. It's all downhill, and I don't mean that in the bad way. It's like a dramatic plateau and then downhill. You've reached your peak. Allow yourself the moment of the peak when, like, he gets the glove back and everything goes quiet and he's holding it. And
exactly,
he gets interrupted very briefly by Tony. He gets interrupted by Tony. He gets it back, he's holding it, and he snaps. And from that moment, you cannot escalate. You've already escalated to the point of the climax of the previous film. You are undergoing the same conflict and struggle and expectation all over again. You can't have a ramp up. You have to have relief. And that relief can be comedic. That relief can be cathartic. In this case, it's very cathartic. But yeah, no, you have to have a release. The entire series at that point has been building to that moment for both like thematically for the MCU, structurally for the MCU, for Thanos the Infinity Stones, but also most importantly for Tony Stark the character. This is his final move on the chessboard, and from the very beginning of the MCU to this point, it's all been his story. You can't have that ramp up because he's about to fucking die. It just doesn't work. You know, you have to have that let down. You can't go full balls energy after that, or else you're not going to be allowed the space to, like, the mourning space, I want to say, the shock trauma space that is created at the end of something like Endgame or Lord of the Rings, where you can have very long endings. You know, we're going through everyone. This shot is going to take a while, and it's just people standing there looking sad. Why? Because it's everyone. So fuck you. You know, or like, here's ending 5, and now here's ending 6, and now the hobbits are going on a boat, and now Steve is going back in time. Oh, wait, Steve came back. Oh, wait, we're going to the Shire. You know, you have to have that letdown release and then pacing out, or else the film is cheap. If the film jumped into Iron Man right then, it would have to end right then. Otherwise, the rest of the ending doesn't work. He'd have to become like a god. And that's what it would really mean, is that instead he would be ramping up and suddenly like fighting Thanos full on with all the powers of the Infinity God, and then surviving afterwards and being like, yeah, I built my own world, and Pepper's gonna move in with me, and Happy gets an apartment downtown, and the rent's not too bad. Why am I paying rent? You own this place. Yeah, I know. You know, like, would we love to see the what was it, Superman 1 million ending? Where he moves into the sun and has a golden life with immortal Lois Lane? Sure. Yeah, I'm sure everyone would have loved to see that. But you know what it would have been? Fucking cheap. Fucking cheap. So, no.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, on the one hand, I see the surface logic of the people who are so fixated on this change.
Yeah.
Where the song is so associated with the first Iron Man movie. There's almost a full circle thought there, and I can see that.
And I understand the interest in that. However, we already had that full circle in the step away and then reintroduction of aspects of it from Iron Man 3 into Civil War Homecoming. We've entered like parody era of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore, we cannot use it, or else it's immediately lessened. It's immediately undercutting itself. You can't refer to yourself that many times without it being something fresh, or there being like a long distance between them. When Tony comes back, inevitably, yes, absolutely, 100%, fuck yes, right then.
Oh, it's no, that's where you pull the song out.
Yeah.
That's where you pull the song out.
At some point in Riri's upcoming show, yeah, 100%. Like maybe her first fight, but when she's a little more sure of herself, and her second fight, full on I am Iron Man. And it would be, you know, like a thematic proving of herself, blah 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 blah. But no, there's a real fucking problem with people who are like online fandom, where they think looks awesome equals is in the best interest of the story and the character. And that's how you got the Snyderverse, which has thankfully been taken out behind the shed by James Gunn, who has killed every aspect of it. Every aspect of it. It's dead. Its family is dead. It's friends are dead. The banker it goes to is dead. The guy it buys its fish from is dead.
I want that son of a bitch dead. I want him dead. I want him dead. I'm dead. What am I, alone in this world? Did I ask you what you're trying to do? Did I ask you what you're trying to do?
And bless James Gunn for it, because he recognized what did and did not work about it. And what did work about it is 1%. What did not work about it is 99%.
But I am going to stop you right there, because we are going to get to all of that later.
Yes. Okay.
Like, make no mistake. just one final thought with the use of Iron Man. What an amazing thing that people don't seem to notice when they put that clip together is that you have the song say, I am Iron Man, and then Tony says it about 5 seconds afterward. So because you have that repetition right away, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it immediately cheapens his last words. You can't have it at all. If necessary, you could do an orchestral arrangement of its theme to have led into him saying that and layer that in. But that would last at most 5 to 10 seconds and would immediately cease upon the snap.
Yeah, and the second thing is, I'm sure that there's someone listening to this and going, Mike, didn't you just pitch the exact same idea in Violent Night with the sledgehammer scene and King of Kings?
That's a little different. That is a thematic ramp up. Yeah, that is a thematic ramp up. That is a character gaining a tool and then showcasing that tool. Like it's a skill and then they showcase the skill. To which the violence of the film moves up another step and accelerates. That's literally a thematic ramp up. That's the point of it.
And I mean, quite simply, you have a song telling a story that pretty much matches what you're seeing on the screen in a scene that actually goes long enough to take advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas like,
like Tony's death scene is too short for the song to work.
It's not only too short, it's not on message whatsoever. I mean, him saying I am Iron Man the first time is kind of, it's cheeky. It's more about breaking a rule and that being in line with his character. And then the straightforwardness of like having such an easy theme that you can market with. There's a reason, however, though, that the majority of music in the first two Iron Man films and his unofficial theme for the longest time was not more Black Sabbath or, you know, Ozzy. It was AC/DC. And that's because it's music that is more thematically in line with him, whereas Black Sabbath is not. Iron Man is not about, like, being Iron Man. That song is not about it, but like Thunderstruck is pretty much about, you know, like how awesome, how awesome, how awesome, how awesome. Like that's the point of it. It's hype music. Yeah. And there's a reason why, even though I Am Iron Man is considered like, oh, that, you know, you lead in with that. If you actually think about the majority of Tony Stark, like, Iron Man moments, it's AC/DC. Because that's what works. Marvel's telling you. Marvel's telling you right there. I Am Iron Man is useful for a spike. That's it. Nothing else.
Yeah, a spike, promotional trailers and so forth, but it's so goddamn on the nose.
Yeah, yeah. Too on the nose. It's playing Hallelujah in a, yes, I'm going to harp on him again, Zack Snyder film.
Now, as much as I love the fact that we've just spent 20 minutes on two random TikTok clips.
Shaw.
You remember back when we reviewed Escape to Witch Mountain, and I think you had brought up rumors of a Witch Mountain TV series coming to Disney Plus.
Indeed.
I have casting news in that the Nerdist is reporting that Bryce Dallas Howard is set to star in the Disney Plus Witch Mountain series.
Yeah. Yeah, she's had the controlling interest creatively for the like last 5 years of it.
Which, like I think I mentioned before, even just from her directorial work, yes. She is actually going to be playing Audrey, according to a press release. She is, quote, Tia's devoted and loving mother. Her husband died from a mental illness, and she tries to reassure a fretful Tia that she shows no sign of following her father's dark spiral. A warm mama bear type, but like everyone in this town, not everything is as it seems.
That is a vastly different story in terms of what was expected.
Yeah, on the one hand, I'm intrigued by this because off the top of my head, we have never seen Tia and Tony's mother in any previous iteration of Witch Mountain.
Yeah. Like, I thought they were dead. They had died in the thingy. The thing that happened before, you know, like.
Exactly.
The crash. The yeah, you know. Okay. Oh, okay.
But with that said, and this is the other hand here, because I am intrigued yet leery when I read the plot synopsis, which is as follows. The series is, quote, a modern reinvention of the cult classic that takes place in the shadow of Witch Mountain, following two teens that develop strange abilities and discover their sleepy suburb may not be as idyllic as it seems.
Oh, okay. So no, your father did not kill himself. He's an alien. It's more complicated. The Thousand Yaren War with the Cylons has reached Earth.
Now, from that synopsis, I'm wondering if you went to the more or less the same place I did, where this kind of sounds like taking Roswell, Stranger Things, and maybe Riverdale, and just putting all of them in a blender.
I mean, you know, if I was tasked with coming up with a show for Disney Plus, and if I was stealing from the creative team behind Wednesday, that's what I would do as well. Because I'm pretty fucking sure that's what Wednesday is. You just, like, you take an extract of Adam's Family, you take that blended mess that you were just mentioning, and you pour the entire bottle of Adam's Family extract into it, and that's what Wednesday is. It's all of that stuff mixed up, but the flavor is Adam's Family. And you can repeat that with whatever you want. You want a Back to the Future teenage drama? Sure, we can do that. You want one about Willow? Yeah, here, we just did one on Disney. Fuck it. I don't know. Tarzan. Oh, yeah, that's in pre-production. Yep. Welcome to the new bullshit.
Well, also, just to add to your analogy there, from what I've heard about Wednesday, you're going to want to season that mixture with some Harry Potter.
Oh, yes. Quite a lot of Harry Potter. My God. My God. And, like, not saying it's bad. It's very watchable and everything. But the whole time you're watching it, it's like, ah, yes, here is my government-regulated plate. Here is my government-regulated serving of protein. Here is my government-regulated serving of starch. Here is my, you know, it's like everything is exactly to proportion to make like a perfect pie chart of like, we have exactly 83% of IP control and this is product placement. And in here's the Riverdale audience. And it's if someone came out and told me that this show and many other shows like it were built by AI, I would not be surprised. Which is funny because they're all kind of based on Riverdale's approach, which was, as I have stated before, I'm pretty sure, like, pulling ideas out of a hat or isolating writers from each other to an abusive level so that they couldn't share plot elements or character changes or anything.
Yeah, I mean, like, for my part, I get the logic behind what Disney is probably doing because you just know that they looked at Netflix, saw the success that Stranger Things was having.
I mean, who hasn't? And
yeah, and like you know, they had to go, okay, what do we have in our catalog that we could do that with? I mean, this is the same logic that brought Star Trek to the big screen, so it's not exactly a first.
Yeah, no, it's true.
But at the same time, I'm also going, this doesn't really sound like Witch Mountain.
No. Now, you know, obviously they'll find ways to Witch Mountain it up. It'll have plenty of references and such. But quite frankly, you know, it's probably not a bad idea if you want that IP to continue. you're going to need to connect it to something that kids will automatically connect it to, or A will automatically connect it to. And as I said when we reviewed Witch Mountain, I assumed going into it that Witch Mountain was a fucking military facility. Because that's how this cliche works. There's aliens on the run from the government, escape to or from Witch Mountain. That's like a military facility. That's a place that, like, it in my mind, and I remember what Witch Mountain looked like in the movie because I remember screaming about how no, it was it's a gentle slope. It's a glen, possibly a dale. But
which honestly might have been my favorite thing about the review.
Yeah, I mean, you know, best part of the movie, obviously. But like when I picture it in my mind, I see the mountain from Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but under it has been like photoshopped by my brain an 80s style government military base. And it kind of looks like a cheesy horror sci-fi novel cover from like 1983. And it smells like the best cigarettes Reaganism had to offer.
I mean, on the one hand, like, yeah, I can picture it too. And you're absolutely right. But at the same time, we remember what that movie looked like. They did not have the budget to do that in Witch Mountain until 2009.
I would have accepted like forced perspective fucking sets, paintings. Come on, a matte painting. Give me a matte painting.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me one movie, one ludicrously expensive movie where every background, every set is a matte painting and it's shot with forced perspective. So the actors are like on a completely black set and it's all done with like mirrors and reflecting layer glass in camera that has been painstakingly painted and then lined up precisely. So the actor can't fucking move. Give me 2 hours of that.
Oh, I swear to God, this is why time travel needs to be invented, so that we can go back and do this. next up, we're going to jump way the hell out of our usual comfort zone for a moment. Well, actually, we're going to talk representation for a bit, so not that far out, but we're going to take a few moments to basically mock Candace Cameron Bure.
I'm trying to think of who that is.
I love how I haven't even got through the intro and we've already started with the mockery.
I suppose.
Very quickly. Oh no! It's just your instant. I have no idea who that is. Was just so perfect. So, back in the '80s, did you ever watch Full House?
Yes, unfortunately.
So, Candace Cameron Bure was the oldest sister, DJ Tanner, who would, as she went, got older, would go on to become, as the kids today like to say, Christian AF. And brought Fuller House to Netflix and, shall we say, really has a thing for traditional family values. And specifically, recently got in a bit of hot water when she moved over to the Great American Family Network as both an actor and I believe, I can't remember what her exact title is, but I'm going to say creative consultant. And at one point stated that at no point in any of their movies would we see same-sex couples.
Wow.
Needless to say, that didn't go over well. She got called out by former So You Think You Can Dance judge and singer JoJo Siwa, who had actually just settled another feud with Bure like several weeks beforehand.
Oh, sled.
And also by Bure's on-screen sister, Jodie Sweetin, who had played her younger sister on Full House. And so Bure puts out a quote-unquote apology where she, you know, declared she had a great love for all people, how the media was attempting to divide us. The kind of apology where you expect the phrase, my remarks were taken out of context, to show up somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, I bring this up specifically because of one of the other actors on the Great American Family Network, actor Neil Bledsoe, who announced that he has resigned and will not be working for the GAF in the future.
Why that?
Oh, I'm going to read his statement, and there's one part that I just so thoroughly enjoyed is the only reason I'm doing this story.
Read it with Christ. Read it with my blessings.
quote, my life wouldn't be where it is today without the love, support, and guidance of the LGBTQIA+ community. From my mentors in college to the myriad of agents and managers, writers and directors, teachers and colleagues, and, of course, my dear friends and family, who have all touched my life, I owe them a great debt. As someone who struggled as a young man with our society's extremely narrow definition of masculinity, it was their community that provided me with refuge and a guiding light when my life felt lost. And now, if I cannot stand up for that community in their time of need, my debt to them means nothing. So, I want to be very clear, my support for the LGBTQIA+ community is unconditional. Nothing is worth my silence or their ability to live and love freely in a world that we are lucky enough to share with them. Bledsoe also explained how, in protest of Bure's remarks, he decided not to promote his most recent film, Christmas at the Drive-In, and mentioned how his own Christian beliefs also drove his decision to end his relationship with the network.
I was just saying, Father, how I'm looking forward to discussing the social effects of some of the church's thinking as regarding issues of personal morality.
Now, we're just going to take a moment to bask in the proper use of Christian beliefs.
That is throwing shade on dickbags. Again, the most Christian thing you can do is throw shade at dickbags. That's pretty much most of it, actually, is throwing shade at dickbags. It's a very gay religion.
Now, to continue his statement, quote, everyone is entitled to their beliefs, and these are mine. The recent comments made by leadership at Great American Family are hurtful, wrong, and reflect an ideology that prioritizes judgment over love. I was raised as a Christian and believe in the essential message of love and forgiveness. That said, I could never forgive myself for continuing my relationship with a network that actively chooses to exclude the LGBTQIA+ community. This is about someone in an executive position speaking about deliberate exclusion on behalf of an entire network. This is why the phrase traditional marriage is as odious as it is baffling. Not simply wrong in its morality, it's also a moot point when you consider that most romantic movies don't feature married couples at all, nor even weddings, but simply people meeting and falling in love. To describe that love in the full human representation of the LGBTQIA+ community as a trend is also both troubling and confusing. When institutions such as the Mormon Church support marriage equality and join the vast majority of Americans who already believe in the fundamental right to love who and how we please, And when that right is about to be codified into the law of the land, one has to ask not what are the trends, but whether any organization that stands against such love would be trending toward the dustbin of history.
Yeah, the fact that the Mormons are on board with it definitely surprised me. I read that a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. I was like, really? Huh. Okay.
Yes.
Mormons. Down with at least that anyway. They still got some problems, but hey, they're trying. Mormons.
weren't you guys like two levels below Christian conservatives in terms of being against same-sex marriage?
It once started by a bank frauder, and now it's kind of legitimate. Mormons.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, I just wanted to bring this up because I just enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, that's some delightful comeuppance. And like, I have room in my heart for three cast members from any show, more or less. Like, pick a show and there'll be a top three. Everyone else exists, and I respect their validity as sentient beings and such. But I've got room in my heart for three. The rest can all fry. And you're not one of the Olsen twins. That's mostly vicarious Scarlet Witch love, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You're not in an Alanis Morissette song, and you're not Bob Saget. So, go fuck yourself. You don't exist to me anyway.
Yeah, and also respect to Jodie Sweetin, who is basically rebuilding her career after a lot of addiction-related issues.
Shout out to her, then.
Yeah, and to still be willing to speak up in this manner is like, okay, respect.
Something about Stamos. I can't think of anything, but something about Stamos.
Oh, that man's hair just will not quit. He may die, but I swear, one day he will die, but his hair will somehow go on. And in fact, actually, the first time I saw Never Too Young to Die, I was live tweeting it, and half of my material was jokes about his hair, and Stamos himself was liking or retweeting all of it.
Or Stamos's hair was.
So, I mean, the man knows what has kept him in the public eye and has fully embraced it.
Yeah, it's not talent.
We briefly brought up Wednesday earlier, and that's where we're going to go now, because it's what Tim Burton's latest project to be called out for being racist.
Yeah. Now, and it's one of those ones where it's like, there really is only like, there's one black character. And yeah, she's in opposition. In a very gothy setup with a show that's basic premise is that like outcasts and outsiders or like minorities in a place should not feel so threatened and put upon and always constantly in conflict with each other. And it's like, yeah, it's almost like this show is, as I said, kind of built by committee.
And now when you mentioned Wednesday really only having one black character, and even that's in more of an adversarial role, apparently that's actually a lot of Tim Burton projects.
Yeah, it's, the truth is Tim Burton has always been kind of like just a little on the edge of like, okay, but something's weird there. There's something not quite, you know, it's hard to put your your finger on it, and then you look back at all the time he spent around Johnny Depp, and you're like, oh, that can't be good. Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
there's a time and a place for enjoying Tim Burton material, and it's the 90s and early 2000s.
Actually. Burton actually has addressed this criticism in an interview where he claimed that films either call for things or they don't. And Burton did specifically say, and get ready to facepalm, folks, is pretty much all I'm going to say here. Quote, I remember back when I was a child watching The Brady Bunch and they started to get all politically correct. Okay, let's have an Asian child and a black. I used to get more offended by that than just, I grew up watching blaxploitation movies, right?
Is he saying he was offended by The Brady Bunch, including, like, black and Asian cast members?
I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
and I said, that's great. I didn't go like, okay, there should be more white people in these movies.
Oh yeah, The Brady Bunch definitely needs more white people.
No, he's saying, oh, well, I didn't complain that there were not enough white people in blaxploitation films.
Oh, okay. Well, what does he want, a medal? Okay. But no one asked you. We're talking about why there's not more black people who aren't, you know, antagonists in your films, and why when you do include them they are overwhelmingly antagonists. Why for what the purpose is, why?
I mean there is a way to respond to this, and Samuel L. Jackson does have a quote that I'll get to in a minute, but this was not it.
No, and like there are dumber responses. I've heard dumber responses that Samuel L. Jackson also had to respond to. But poor Samuel, he does seem to have to do a lot of like putting out fires.
Yeah. Like when Burton brings up blaxploitation films, I'm sitting here going, didn't blaxploitation become a thing in large part because a lot of black actors couldn't get projects in mainstream Hollywood?
Yeah, the entire purpose was that they, you know, like, were films that, like, could be where, they, like an entire industry of people could work. It could then be films for an entire community, like films created by an entire community. It's like, yeah, there's a different power dynamic there than, say, a studio choosing over a vast selection with all the resources that they need, who they want to have in a film. It's one of those things where I don't know what he's actually lost perspective of. Maybe he is racist, and it kind of sounds like at least he hasn't grown up past, you know, like the 1970s or so, which, I don't know, that happens to a lot of people. Or maybe, like, he just can't see films being made in any other experience than his own. And in his own, he had access to resources and support from a very young age.
Yeah, like, Tim, buddy, I know I'm only imagining that you will ever hear this, but Yeah, there were not a lot of white people in blaxploitation films for a reason.
Yeah, and while we got you at the sidebar here, Bucko, stop taking credit for Nightmare Before Christmas. Thank you.
Yeah, please. Samuel L. Jackson said, quote, "I had to go back in my head and go, how many black characters have been in Tim Burton movies? And I may have been the first, I don't know, or the most prominent in that particular way, but it happens the way it happens. I don't think it's any fault of his or his method of storytelling. It's just how it's played out. Tim's a really great guy."
It's just not how he pictures the universe when he's thinking of creations of his own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a fucking blind side.
Yeah, like, again, quick side comment to Tim Burton. You may want to hire Sam Jackson as your press agent or something. Because God knows that was better than what you did, buddy. Oh. And this article from It's Gone Viral. So, yeah, I have no idea how valid they are as a news site, but this is also criticism I've heard in a ton of other places, so they go on to point out the only other black actor to have a prominent role in one of Tim Burton's films is Ken Page in The Nightmare Before Christmas, though he was also playing a villain called Oogie Boogie.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of discussion to be had about such a name.
Precisely. Because, of course, Oogie Boogie is essentially a derogatory term for African-American people. So again, Tim, dude, this is not looking good.
Yeah, not the best. Not the best. Oh, well. You know, again, one of those things of like, there's not a hot topic around me, so I never really gave a crap about Tim Burton in that sense. And when I did respect his work and oeuvre, that was in the way, way back when you had VHS and you were a weirdo for enjoying his stuff. So I got to enjoy it and no one else should.
Yeah, I mean, we had Tim Burton. We now have Neil Gaiman.
Yeah. And he's much better. He's much better.
Yeah, yeah, he really is.
Also much more personable.
Personable, respectable. Presents himself as more of a decent human being. I feel I could go on. also, as I was saying earlier, and speaking of things that are not looking good, we head over to the DCU.
Yay! It's blowing up after all.
Well, it is, but it isn't, which we will get more into momentarily. First, a quick note regarding the upcoming Flash movie, which has had its release date changed. Not in the way many of you are probably hoping. I'm going to just put that out there right now. The movie has actually had its release date moved up in that it will be coming out a week earlier on June 16th of 2023 instead of June 23rd. So now, amongst other things, it will be going head-to-head at the box office with Pixar's Elemental and the upcoming Jennifer Lawrence rated R film called No Hard Feelings. So it really does kind of sound like there's at least one DC movie the studio has faith in. And it's this one.
See, I don't think at this point it's faith. I think it's the mechanism. And as broken as this film is, as absolutely fucking train wreck as the film is, it's still, as a mechanism, will work. And so you flip the switch, even if the switch is weird and broken and spitting out sparks and it's like got an oily texture on it, and now your hand smells really bad. You flip that fucking switch.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the end of everything. You flashpoint and you can have anything happen afterwards. You can make everything right. You can fix all of it, and you can do it in a fucking moment. Just done. And what do you want the universe to actually look like? And it's so easy. It's just such a simple, basic way to introduce James Gunn's new universe and throw away the trash forever. Yay! I finally give a crap about seeing Flashpoint, and it has nothing to do with Flashpoint. It's more like the final parade for a prisoner about to be executed in a Soviet bloc.
Now, while still sort of on Flashpoint, but moving to Superman, and you remember The Rock, of course, swearing up and down, oh yeah, you got to listen to the people. Everybody's been saying they want Henry Cavill as Superman back. We're going to bring him back. We had the stinger in Black Adam that everyone went gaga over.
They're going to vote with their wallets. And what was the voter turnout? Oh, $40 million profit.
What Black Adam did at the box office seems to oddly depend on who you ask. But the simple fact is, The Rock at one point compared Black Adam's box office numbers to Captain America, the First Avenger. And saying, no, we succeeded because it did comparable to what First Avenger did.
If you have to do that much math to claim a movie has succeeded, it hasn't succeeded. You should be able to be like, yeah, no, it was a moderate success. Otherwise,
now,
stop lying to me. Stop lying to yourself. Stop lying to yourself, Dwayne.
Now, my logic here is much simpler, because in 2022... The Rock is claiming that his movie was a box office success because it did numbers roughly equivalent to a film from 11 years ago.
Yeah, no inflation.
And I mean, yes, Black Adam is basically a 90s superhero movie. The logic is sound, but it's not helping.
Yeah. Plus, if I recall, immediately following Captain America First Avenger was The Avengers. How'd that do profit-wise? Oh, more than 40 million. Like a lot?
Like, yeah.
Like 45 million? More? Wow. 50.
Yeah.
Higher? Oh. Land sakes.
Forget going by fives. Just stick zeros on the end until you eventually hit the right number.
Like, honestly, I just, like, I can understand why the Rock, like, his approach to doing this is, like, always positive, until we can forget that I did that project and never talk about it again. That's his approach to things, you know, Scorpion King. Which maybe he'll come back to now, because, like, it's at least something. Or maybe Fast and the Furious, and he'll get in another fight with Vin Diesel. Yay. But, like, he's not the great draw that he used to be and never really was, but still thinks he is. and everything about the approach of that film was wrong. And oh god, it's been a long 10 years, but it's worth it to finally see. And I know I just keep talking about to finally see the Snyderverse end. It's because it's not good. Not even things connected to it are actually of high quality. I really liked James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, but it's still fucking hamstrung to that world. You know, it's still connected to that. And the people who like that fucking world didn't show up for it. So it's like, there's nothing to be had here. You can't even get its fans to support it, to show it more assistance. They didn't show up for fucking Black Adam either. Like, there's nothing. It's empty. It's all hollow. It, my God, it's full of nothing. Thank fuck it's finally ending. I can't believe the Snyderverse outlasted the New 52. Two very bad ideas.
Well, also remember that and that not only did the Snyder Bros not support Black Adam, as we reported on a previous episode, they turned on it before it premiered.
Yeah, no, it's true. They're vicious little shitheads. I kind of now want to start a rumor about how, like, the 1980s Supergirl movie was actually based on a spec script by a very young Zack Snyder, to see if I can get them super into that really, really fucking terrible Sulkin film.
I am only objecting to that because it has a special place in my heart as a ridiculous, silly film that I truly enjoy.
Well, it shouldn't.
Who is she?
You know, I think I recognize the costume.
Question remains, just who on earth are you?
On earth, I'm Lee. Linda Lee.
Whoa, whoa.
Why don't you just leave this poor kid alone and worry about the other one that flies?
Because nobody gets in my way.
Wait 1 minute. I mean, you can do the whole number, leap tall buildings at a single bound, and look right through things.
Yes.
Bend steel bars.
Yes.
Enjoy your prison.
Like, I love it. I adore it. I would be the first to tell you it is not good. Oh, but speaking of that Kryptonian family and Superman specifically, like I said, we had The Rock trumpeting how he was the one to bring Henry Cavill back as Superman. We had Henry Cavill go on Instagram and make that famous "I am back as Superman" announcement.
He jumped Roman Reigns backstage in the lead up to Royal Rumble. Of course, you know, like these are basic reintroduction steps, you know. Really just following the business model.
Venus? When?
Yeah, exactly, but there's a tiny issue with that business model, because all of this hype may have been a tad premature. Because, now, there was, amongst other things, rumors of Superman having a cameo in The Flash, And apparently, now I'm getting this from Slash Film, but they're saying that the Hollywood Reporter is reporting that that cameo may or may not stay in the film. And that if it does stay in, then, quote, its inclusion promises something that the studio would have no plans on delivering. And I think what it's coming down to is essentially all of this was announced before there was anything concrete for bringing Henry Cavill's Superman back to the big screen. Writers were taking meetings with the studio. Flash director Andy Muschietti threw his name into the ring, saying that he planned to bring, quote, a tone similar to the, hopeful and heroic colors of the 1978 movie directed by Richard Donner for Cavill's next outing as Superman. Hopeful and heroic. You know, the things that Superman is actually supposed to be.
Yeah, and if that has been the end of Henry Cavill's Superman, may I just say, good. Because I don't think he can play those aspects. I don't think he can play the character. I don't. And I think other people finally see that as well now. That he looks the part is not good enough. That he looks like intense when he wants to is not good enough. That's not fucking Superman. Superman's supposed to be like light and kind of playful and gentle and, you know, kind. And this is not a slight against Henry Cavill. It's just those aren't characters he plays. He plays really good, like, anti-heroes and villains with a reason. Like, give him a good cause, and he's, you know, set him off. I'd be really interested to see what he could have done with Magneto, you know, like, in a Michael Fassbender-esque type. Yeah. But he's not Superman. It doesn't work. It just doesn't. And if you actually wanted to see, the internet truly believed that Superman, Henry Cavill's Superman works. Why is that not reflected in the viewership outside the internet? If you talk to people outside the internet about Christopher Reeves, they agree. Yeah, that, like, he's Superman. He was the part. It was perfect. Normal people don't talk about fucking Henry Cavill. No one gives a shit. No one.
Well,
people talk about fucking Christian Bale, you know, as Batman. Like, you can argue one way or another about his Batman accent and all that shit, but, like, people offline knew he was Batman. People offline knew Heath Ledger was the Joker. Like, a properly casted performance does matter. Everyone knows that fucking Aquaman is played by Jason Momoa because that's well casted. That actually works. And as much as that may be changing, apparently he may be being switched over to Lobo, which also really fucking works.
But yeah.
You know, the reason that sticks with people offline in the real world, where people are not fictional fucking characters, is because of good casting. Henry Cavill is not well casted as Superman. That's it. That's the line.
Well, for my part, and like as much as I agree with pretty much everything you've said, I actually would like to see Cavill stick around as Superman for a little bit longer. And my logic is this. So far, 95% of Henry Cavill's performances as Superman were produced and directed by someone who has absolutely no idea how the Superman character works, has no understanding whatsoever. Like, literally, the best Henry Cavill Superman we got was in Joss Whedon's Justice League, and that is saying something.
Oh, I know, but the problem is he was cast from that idiot's perspective. So he is himself fundamentally wrong. It's not necessarily about having a better writer write him better content. He can't do it. He's not Superman. He'll never be Clark Kent. Find someone else. Like, it doesn't work. That's my approach. Well, anyway.
I think his work as Superman has a problem. Like, I'm willing to give him one more chance, but in saying that, let's be very clear that the best live action Superman is still Christopher Reeve by such a wide margin. It's not funny.
Yeah, I'm not because I at this point he's had it for a decade. Give it to someone, even if he like Tony Stark. It looking at Robert Downey Jr. etc. He did it for fucking what? No, yeah, 10 years. It was 10, 12 years, something like that. Comes out to maybe 11 years or so, and then he walked away. That should be the length of time that anyone plays a character until they inevitably come back to it later, like decades later. Henry Cavill at that point has had Superman long enough. It's time to walk away and find another younger actor who can bring something else to the table. Even if he is given another shot, it's just pushing another Superman further back. And at this point, it's not worth the amount of time. Find someone else. Get that moving. You know, time to leave that shit behind.
I just want to know what, like, Cavill himself has demonstrated in interviews over pretty much that entire 10 years that he has far more knowledge and understanding of the Superman character than anyone behind the camera on any of the Superman films.
Yeah, and like, fine, then have him appear in the Squadron Supreme. Like, show us what can be done in another property where it's actually adding something, and the inconsistencies can actually help grow the character.
And like
have him be the Sentry. That could work. Where it's like he's playing to all of that goodness and nobleness, but deep down something's wrong. Perfect. Cast Henry Cavill as the Sentry.
I mean, yeah, that could also really... I just want to know what he would do being directed by someone who actually understood the character.
I think it's like asking Arnold Schwarzenegger to play Christopher Reeve's Superman. It doesn't work. That's not how his characterization on screen is. Same reason why he doesn't get rom-coms.
Yeah, fair enough.
He's got a menacing aura to him. Superman shouldn't menace.
And even if hypothetically that cameo in The Flash was there, and I saw Henry Cavill doing exactly the same thing that he was doing in the Zack Snyder films, that would be enough for me to go, okay, I have what I need to know. He's got to go.
Don't give him any more. Like, no, don't give that mouse a cookie. Don't give the mouse a cookie. you fucking stomp on the mouse. That's it.
Like for me, it's the same as Brandon Routh's Superman or Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, where I would look at those movies and go, those are bad. But I don't think that those actors are the problem, so I would like to see them one more time.
Yeah, but that's the difference, is those were good performances of interesting characters. This was not a matching performance. He can't do it. It's not in his bag. Having Andrew Garfield be kind of a likable, weird, kinetic nerd? Easy. No problem. This just doesn't work. It doesn't work. The man's meant to play fucking Bond villains. Like henchmen.
Well, I make the comparison because Andrew Garfield in the Sony the Amazing Spider-Man did not work.
Yeah, like, but like, his character for me,
he was a terrible Peter Parker.
But everyone agreed that his performance was so kinetic and engaging. It just wasn't Peter Parker, you're right. But it was actually something to watch. There's nothing to watch from Henry Cavill. There's not.
But seeing Andrew Garfield in the MCU Spider-Man, I'm sitting there going, yes, he's finally being allowed to do it. Thank you.
Sure. But again, Andrew Garfield's a better actor than Henry Cavill. I don't have the faith in Henry Cavill. People do. I don't. He's a fucking Army Hammer workaday, you know, chisel schlub. I'm happy that he's a nerd. Great. It doesn't make him capable of performing these characters. He's not good enough. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's... I think for me, it's... I have trouble pinning the performance issue solely on Cavill because everything around him that Snyder was doing was so bad and so far off the mark that I would like to see that one performance under someone else so that, like I said, I could go, oh, he's still doing the same thing no matter what. Yeah, this is not working.
Yeah.
Like, frankly, I wish Cavill could have had someone else directing him as Superman years ago.
I really do. I just wish that they would finally make a new film so we can actually talk about a new film instead of the same old, same old. Like,
yeah.
Warner Brothers has been treading water for so long on this. I just want it to move on. And like, they won't. They're moving on slowly, but like the internet is being such a bitch about it. And I just don't like Henry Cavill enough to give a crap about him in this film or in any film. I enjoyed him in Mission Impossible. I enjoyed him in The Witcher. But now he don't got no Witcher, and he died in the Mission Impossible, and he ain't getting Superman, so on him. Liam Hemsworth for life, and, bitches.
I mean, really, at the end of the day, the whole thing may be a moot point anyway. But speaking of moving on from things, were you looking forward to Wonder Woman 3?
Nope. And I'm also kind of happy that that's gone. Because
guess what?
Yeah, I think the creative energy from that was gone. That was dead. That was dead in the water. So I'm happy that finally it was put out of its misery as well.
Well, I think with this, it's... The film has been put out of its misery. The character has not.
Yeah, obviously they're going to... They know now that that Wonder Woman is bankable. And they're going to use the hell out of her in whatever comes up. It's going to be expansive and great and terrific. And we'll finally move past the fact that, like, you know, Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman, was important and it was pretty good, you know, like, it wasn't the best, but it was pretty good, and it was good enough, goddammit. And it's one of the few things from the Snyderverse that, like, you can separate and be like, yeah, that at least there's this. But again, resting on that laurel that is becoming increasingly, you know, like, backdated, that does not help anyone. And as we saw, the magic and mojo of that creative team is gone from 84. Like, that was just a mess. So I'm happy that they'll finally hand it off to a fresh creative team who, inspired by the work that they did and other things, like, say, the television show, a lot of more aspects of the comics and different aspects of the take in the comics and how Wonder Woman has inspired other people and other characters that have appeared in her books and then gone on to be their own characters. Great things are going to come. Great fucking things are going to come. So I for one, I do not mourn on many, many levels for the death of the current DC universe. But the fact that Crisis on Infinite Earths is one of my favorite book series DC ever created may have something to do with that. When DC decides to blow everything up, some see cataclysm. I see opportunity.
Yeah, no, that's entirely valid. And while we're also talking about the internet being bitches and overreacting to everything, there was, of course, Gal Gadot had put out, I think, a tweet on social media celebrating her role as Wonder Woman and how much she loved the character and was looking forward to what was coming next. And then like a week later, Wonder Woman 3 got pulled. And of course, people freaked out. Like, how dare you take this away from her and so on and so forth. Well, they took it away from her.
Yeah,
it just was not Gal Gadot.
I can't see them at the moment getting rid of her. In fact, I think that the way that they'll approach it's a very smart move, considering the character, the character's themes, family, community, you know, like stuff like that. Everyone who has ever been in Wonder Woman, a Wonder Woman film, etc., or TV show or whatever, is always going to be coming in and out of it. She's never going to fully leave. Neither will Linda Carter. It's going to become a thing of, like, even when they move on to the next Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman is still going to be there, as will Linda Carter's Wonder Woman. Like, that's one of those great things about Wonder Woman. Continuity kind of goes because we're talking about mythic characters to begin with. So even within their own universe, they're allowed to be like, no, I'm kind of like a constellation now, but I can like manifest myself and talk to you. Don't think about it too much. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Diana. Diana is and is not also Wonder Woman and also like Wonder Girl. Like,
yeah.
Fuck off. I think that they'll approach Wonder Woman in the sense of, like, you have multiple generations, and the next one that gets introduced will be the recent Wonder Woman from about, was it, like, 4 or 5 years ago that DC introduced. I can't remember her name. She was a woman of color. And she'll be Nubia? Next... Yeah, no, not Nubia. It's a different... They introduced, like, a new young character who I think was like from South America.
I honestly for a minute there I didn't really know what you were referring to, but you said South American. I'm like, that sounds familiar.
But also Nubia, you have an entire film option to spin out with Nubia. But we're...
Oh, okay, I got it. Straight off of Google here, Yara Flor from the tribe of the Amazons of the Amazon is the new Wonder Woman who, in the absence of Princess Diana, came out of obscurity from the heart of the Amazon rainforest in Brazil to protect man's world from the magic that is within it.
Yeah, so like she becomes the third generation one who has to go and find Gal Gadot with the help of Linda Carter and Nubia. There, I just wrote your fucking next film, and it automatically falls into some basic plot points that are entirely predictable and pretty much like that would be the plot for like Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's most of Star Wars. It's like, come on, super easy to do. I think that's how they'll approach it. They'll approach it generationally. So new Wonder Woman, yes. Old woman Wonder Woman, yes. Legacy Wonder Woman, yes. Other Wonder Women from across time, sure. Why not? They have women. So many binders of women. What else do we have?
I was just going to go into more detail about the whole Wonder Woman 3 thing. And the ideas that you just threw out are clearly going to be probably of help to whoever wrote or whoever will write the movie, because Patty Jenkins, it's not so much that Wonder Woman 3 was canceled as Patty Jenkins has decided to take her ball and go home.
Yeah.
According to the rap, the treatment for Wonder Woman 3 was given not only to DC Studios co-heads James Gunn and Peter Safran, but executives Michael DeLuca and Pamela Addy. And I'm reading this from Slash Film. While all four figures believed the treatment needed edits, Gunn and Safran were apparently not involved in the final decision whatsoever. DeLuca, Abdi, and Jenkins reportedly had a heated discussion about the treatment, with the latter standing firm on her vision for the character that she reintroduced to the world in 2017. With the trio unable to compromise, Jenkins left the project. Now, this apparently at one point involves Jenkins emailing the executives the Wikipedia page with the definition of character arc, which, after Wonder Woman 84 and Diana herself being the single most selfish character in that entire movie.
Yeah, like you can talk about character arc, but you literally brought back a dead character to redo a bunch of aspects and then had him just like poof away so that she could learn to not be such a selfish bitch. And it's like, I'm sorry. Did you read that definition yourself?
Exactly.
Fuck. Yeah. Yeah, I and when it becomes like heated in that regard, like, I'm sure everyone was an asshole involved. I'm sure she had good points and all that, but also like, wonder how bad that script is. like if it's anything like 84 and they're just like, no, stop it. Just give us a movie that'll actually work. And she's like, no, I'm following my vision. And my vision takes me to Wonder Woman 84 again and again and again.
Yeah, like, I think the simple fact is it comes down to quite simply the studio does have a plan, and they have story points and so forth laid out, which means that writers and directors like Patty Jenkins aren't entirely going to be able to simply do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And Patty Jenkins being able to do just whatever she wanted was how Wonder Woman 84 happened.
Yeah, and it was and is still a mess. There is not really a chance to fix that film. I don't even think a director's cut could really help it very well. It's such a mess.
Oh, excuse me.
And like, if at this point you can't work with the studio on coming up with a story and character arc that works within a larger storytelling continuity because you're working for a comic book company, you're in the wrong specific genre niche of this industry. Go make whatever the fuck you want to, but it ain't this.
Yeah, no, and apparently this has come up from Patty Jenkins before. And, like, for instance, she was originally supposed to do Thor the Dark World. She left that, and it sounds like even there it was a case of Marvel wouldn't let her do whatever she wanted. A studio with a long-term plan getting into a fight with a director that wants free reign.
Oh, well.
Warner shame. Brothers. Yeah. Like, maybe Warner Brothers should have, shall we say, done a little more of a background check, so to speak.
Yeah. Like, at that point, it becomes clear of, like, okay, you just maybe this isn't the approach for you. Maybe we should have gone with someone else.
Yeah. And even with the Star Wars Rogue Squadron movie that she was supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
I have been seeing reports that that movie is currently in development purgatory. We'd originally reported it was a scheduling thing with Jenkins, but now I'm seeing that there may have been similar creative differences.
Like, watch me be surprised. That does not surprise me in the least for some reason. Like, at this point, it's just, yeah, I'm gonna believe that entirely. And it's purely based off having fucking seen 84 and be like, oh, this is what you do when you're left to your own devices. Not good.
Yeah, I mean, when you see the Diana and Steve Trevor relationship in 84, Patty, you created a character who was all about love and so forth, and then essentially had her commit rape.
Yeah.
Again, questions.
It's not the best, and it's so far away from like being useful and like reusable and workable. And again, this is just another aspect of like, I am so happy that this universe Snyder thing is going away, because there's so many things about it that don't work.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to two things, one of which is we're going to have a lot of the same actors from the Snyderverse, but with writers, directors, and producers who have a plan and know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And secondly, right now, I would take any news coming out of this new DCU with a huge grain of salt, because this feels like essentially what we would have had with the MCU in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
If news and social media back then were what it is today.
And that's, yeah, it's like, okay, why is it so difficult, seemingly, for them to get past this? Like, why is it so difficult for DC to get their shit together? I don't get it.
I think I've always said pretty much since the Snyderverse started that, unlike Marvel, Warner Brothers was still employing that old studio logic of what's bankable right now, what's making money right now, what can we get out to take advantage of that as fast as possible.
That makes sense.
Yeah, like it was always that old studio logic. Whereas now they've finally gone, okay, maybe we should have taken our time.
Yeah, perhaps we should have actually given a crap about what we were doing instead of not. And it's like, oh, well, I'm happy that you finally came to that understanding now.
Yeah, it's like story over business.
Yeah. And it's a real simple thing. Story over business. As you say, it's not complicated. It's how films have been made for over a century at this point. Story over business. Try to make a good fucking story. That's how you make your money. From there, maybe you make enough money that you can make a sequel. What a concept. And maybe if it does really well then, you'll be super lucky and you can finish it off with a trilogy. But everyone just jumps right now and is like, we can make 30 fucking films. You know, it's like, no, you cannot. Marvel can, because they seem to have this shit down. You cannot.
And I mean, even with Marvel, always remember that first Iron Man movie in 2008, if that had not worked, Marvel Studios as a whole would not exist.
Yeah. Like,
because
you're right.
Quite simply, if that had not, like, they took such a risk with that first Iron Man. That if it had failed, the whole thing would be going bankrupt.
And like, my God, could you imagine what would be the big thing now?
Oh God, sadly it would be the Snyderverse.
No, because Snyderverse never would have gotten off because Snyderverse was a reaction.
That's it. No, that's a fair point.
Yeah, like we would have a completely different thing. That people would be complaining about and nerds would be super hyping about and all of that. It would be something entirely different. I wonder what it would have been.
I was just going to say. Because I mean, God, would the Fox X-Men movies still be going?
I would hope that they would have gotten better. Maybe?
Yeah, keyword there being hope.
Hope. Pray.
Wonder Woman! Wonder Woman!
All the world is waiting for you. In your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue.
But with that, and the simple fact that if I stop everything here and now, I can grab the cheesy segue of, well, we certainly hope and pray that you have enjoyed the show, our return of the B-roll, and that you'll join us on our next episode. As we continue to have ourselves a schlocky little Christmas, as we check out the sci-fi film, so you know right away this is going to be good.
Oh yeah,
Santa Jaws.
This is going to be bad. I can't wait.
If you want to send us any questions, comments, call me out for that segue that was worthy of the Sci-Fi Channel. the show can be reached at realgeekshfx@gmail.com or on Twitter at realgeekshfx. You can reach me directly on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and for reasons at this point I'm not entirely clear on, Hive, at The Maritime Lord, or over email at themaritimelord@gmail.com. And Crash?
And I, for the time being, can be found on Twitter at Friday in Halifax and at Crash and Burn. Pretty much anywhere else.
And please, oh please, come up with questions to send us, because I frankly find the idea of a year-end B-roll that's nothing but email neat.
It's just neat. I just think it's neat.
It's just gonna be just that fun, laid-back glass of, well, most people would be wine. I can't get funny drunk, so wine wouldn't work. Little piano music in the background as we're just chilling.
You've thought of this.
The scary thing is, I just came up with a scenario, I swear to God.
Sure.
Right now.
Sure.
And I'm, as I'm picturing it in my head, it is far classier than this show has any right to be.
Hey, I can go class. I can pull class out of my ass.
I mean, I can't. I have no business doing so. but until our next episode, when we get to combine the holidays with shark films, because it's pretty much, it's at least my dream come true.
Yes. Until then, goodbye, sweet listener, you weird fucker.
Don't worry, listeners, she meant me.